Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, a New Commentary, Discourse Number 23, given in Bombay, India.
We live on the surface of ourselves, just at the fringe, the boundary. Senses are just on the boundary, and your consciousness is far deep down in the center. We live in the senses, that's natural. But that is not the ultimate flowering. Just the beginning. And when we are living in the senses, we are basically concerned with the objects. Because senses are irrelevant unless concerned with some object of enjoyment. For example, eyes are useless unless there is something to be seen. Ears are useless unless there is something to be heard. And hands are useless unless there is something to be touched. We live in the senses, therefore, we have to live in the objects. Senses are just on the boundary of our being, the body. And objects are not even on the boundary. They are beyond the boundary. So, three points have to be understood before we enter the techniques. First, the consciousness is at the center. Second, the senses through which the consciousness moves out are at the boundary, and the objects in the world beyond the boundary to which the consciousness moves through the senses. These three things have to be remembered. Consciousness at the center, senses at the boundary, and objects beyond the boundary. Try to understand it clearly, because then the techniques will be very simple. Look at it from many directions. One, senses are just in between, just in the middle. At one side is consciousness, at another side is the world of objects. Senses are just in the middle, between the two. From the senses, you can move either way. Either you can go to the objects and the distance is the same, or you can go to the center and the distance is the same. From the senses, doors open both the ways. Move to the objects or move to the center. You are at the senses. That's why one of the most famous Zen masters, Dokuju, has said that Nirvana and the world are at the same distance. So don't think that the Nirvana is very far away. The world and the Nirvana, this world and that other world, are both at the same distance. This thing has created much confusion, because we feel that Nirvana is very, very far away. Moksha The kingdom of God is very, very far away. The world is just near, just here. But Dokuju says, and she says rightly, that both are at the same distance. The world is here, and the Nirvana is also here. The world is near, the Nirvana is also near. You have to move inwards. For the objects, you have to move outwards. The distance is the same. From my eye, my center is just as near as you are near me. I can see you if I move outward. I can see myself if I move inwards. And we are at the doors of senses. But naturally, bodily needs are such that consciousness moves outward naturally. You need food. You need water to drink. You need a house to live. These are your bodily needs. And these can only be found in the world. So naturally, consciousness moves through the senses towards the world. Unless you create a need which can only be fulfilled when you move inwards, you will never move inwards. For example, if a child is born self-sufficient, he needs no food. He will not look at his mother at all. The mother becomes irrelevant, meaningless. Because for the child, mother is not the meaning, food is the meaning. Mother is his first food. And because mother gives him food and satisfies a basic need without which he will die, he starts loving mother. That love comes secondly, as is said on, because the mother is fulfilling a basic need. So those mothers who are feeding their children through bottles should not expect much love. Because for the child, food is the need, not the mother. Mother will come into his being, enter into his being only through food. That's why love and food are deeply related. Very, very deeply related. If your love need is fulfilled, you will need less food. If your love need is not fulfilled, you will need more food. So those who love are and are loved will not gather much fat. There are other reasons also, but this is one of the most basic. They will not eat much. If love is not fulfilled, then food becomes a substitute. Then they will eat much. For a child, food is the basic need. But if a child is born who is self-sufficient, does not need any food, does not need any outward help to be alive, he will not move in the world at all. Ask, do you think he will move? There is no need. And unless a need is there, the energy will never move. We move outwardly not because we are sinners. We move outwardly because we have needs which can be fulfilled only through the objects, which can be gained if we move in the world of objects. Why we don't move in words? Because you have not created yet the need to move in words. Once the need is there, it is as easy to move inwards as to move outwards. What is that need? That need is concerned with religion. You cannot be religious unless that need is there. How that need is created? By what process one becomes aware of a deep need which helps you move inwards? Three things to be remembered. One, death. Remember, all life needs force you to move outwards. All life needs force you to move outwards. If you want to move inwards, death must become a basic concern. Otherwise, you cannot move inwards. That's why it happened that persons like Buddha, who became deeply conscious of death, started moving inwards. Only when you become aware of death, you will create the need to look back. Life looks out. Unless you become aware of death, religion is meaningless for you. That's why animals have no religion. They are alive. They are as much alive as men, or even more. But they cannot be conscious of death. They cannot conceive death. They cannot see death in the future. They see others are dying, but it never occurs to the animal mind that this death is an indication for my death also. For the animal mind, death always occurs to others. And if for you also death is just something which happens to others, you still live in the animal mind. If you are not aware of death, you have not yet become a man. That's the basic difference between animal and man. Because animals cannot be aware of death, only man can be. And if you are not aware of death, you are not a man yet. And only man creates the need to move inwards. When you become man, to me, man means awareness of death. I'm not saying become scared and afraid of death. That is not awareness. Just to be aware of the fact that death is coming near and near. And you have to be prepared for it. Life has its own needs. Death creates its own need. That's why younger societies are irreligious, because younger societies are yet not aware of the phenomena of death. It has not become a central concern for them. Older a society, for example, India, one of the oldest societies in existence, is too much aware of death. Because of that awareness, India is deep down religious. So the first thing, become aware of death. Think about it. Look at it. Contemplate over it. Don't be afraid. Don't escape the fact. It is there. And you cannot escape it. It has come into existence with you. Your death is born with you. Now you cannot escape it. You have it hidden in yourself. Become aware of it. The moment you become aware that you are going to die and death is certain, your total mind will start looking in a different dimension. Then food is a basic need for the body, but not for the being. Because even if you get food, death will occur. Food cannot protect you from death. Food can only postpone. Food can help you postpone. If you get a good shelter, a good house, it will not protect you from death. It will help you only to die conveniently, comfortably. And death, whether comfortably happens or uncomfortably, is the same. In life you may be poor or rich, but death is the great equalizer. The greatest communistic mind, it is death. Howsoever you live, it makes no difference. Death happens equally. In life, equality is impossible. In death, inequality is impossible. Become aware of it, contemplate it. And not only that death is certain somewhere in the future, because then again you cannot contemplate it. If it is very far away, mind has a very small range. The focus of the mind is very small. You cannot think beyond 30 years. After 30 years, there will be death. It is as if you are not going to die. 30 years is such a long. The distance is so much. It is as if death is not going to occur. If you want to contemplate on death, know another fact about it. It can occur the next moment. It is possible the very next moment. You may not be able to hear my whole sentence. I may not be able to complete it. I remember my mother's father used to say to me, When I was born, he consulted one astrologer, one of the best known astrologers of those days. The astrologer was to make my kundali, my birth chart. But the astrologer studied it and he said, if this child survives after 7 years, only then I will make the chart. Because it seems impossible that he can survive after 7 years. So it is useless. If the child is going to die after 7 years, then it's useless to make the kundali. It will be of no use. And this has been my habit, the astrologer said, that unless I am certain that my kundali will be useful, I never make it. So he didn't make it. Fortunately or unfortunately, I survived. Then my mother's father went to the astrologer, but he was dead. So he could never make my kundali. He was dead. So I had been constantly wondering. He was aware of the fact that this child may die, but he was not aware of the fact that he may die. He was not aware. It seems he was absolutely unconcerned. And he was no ordinary man. But no one is concerned with his own death. Knowingly, cunningly, we are not concerned with it because it creates a fear. So I have always suspected that that astrologer might have never looked at his own kundali. Otherwise he would have become aware. Death is possible the very next moment. The mind will not believe it. I say it, and your mind will say, no. How is it possible the next moment? It is far away. But that's the trick. If you postpone, you cannot contemplate. It must happen so near that you can focus on it. And when I say next moment it is possible, I mean it. It can happen. And whenever it will happen, it will be the next moment. Just before it, you would not have conceived that it is going to happen. A person is dying, just a moment before, he could never have thought that death is so near. It always happens in the next moment, remember. It has always happened that way, and this will be the way, always. It happens in the next moment. Bring it near, so you can focus on it. And that very focusing will help you to enter in. A new need is created. Secondly, you go on living, you go on creating meanings and purposes, artificial, for this very moment. You never think of your life as a whole, whether it has any meaning or not. You go on creating new meanings. And you pull on with those meanings. That's why a poor man lives a more meaningful life than a rich man. Because a poor man has many things to get that gives a meaning to his life. If you are really rich, that means you have got everything that is possible. And this world cannot offer anything to you. Your life becomes meaningless. Now you cannot create any meaning for this moment, for this day, to help you live. That's why richer a society, more affluent a culture, more meaninglessness is felt. Poor societies never feel meaninglessness. A poor man is concerned to have a house. Years together he will work for it. He has a meaning. Something has to be achieved. And when he gets the house, he will be happy for a few days at least. But then bigger houses are there. So he will go on moving, doing this and that, never thinking about his life as a whole, whether it has got any meaning or not. Taken as a whole, when you have everything, or just imagine you have got the house, the car that you longed for, all your dreams are fulfilled. Now what? Just imagine, whatsoever you need is there. You have got it. Now, what? Suddenly, meaning disappears. You are standing on an abyss. Nothing can be done. You become meaningless. You are already meaningless, just not aware. Even if you get the whole world, then what? What is fulfilled? Alexander was coming to India and he met a great sage, Diogenes. And Diogenes was one of the most penetrating minds ever born. He lived naked like Mahavir. He is the Mahavir of Greek civilization and culture. He left everything, renounced everything, not because that through renouncing things he is going to get anything. That is not real renounce, not authentic renunciation. If you renounce something to get something, that's a bargain. If you think that you are going to have some reservation in heaven, that's why you renounce something. You renounce the bodily pleasures to have a spiritual bliss. This is not renunciation. Diogenes renounced everything, not because out of it he is going to get something. He renounced it just to see that when I have nothing, whether there is any meaning or not. When I possess nothing, even if then I have a meaning, a purpose, a destiny, then death cannot annihilate anything, because death can annihilate only possessions. Your body is also a possession. He left everything. He had only one thing, a wooden bowl. to drink water. He thought this is not much of a position. Then one day he saw one child drinking water with his hands. He immediately threw that ball. He said, if a child can drink water with his hands, am I more weak than a child? When Alexander was coming to India to win, to make a world empire, somebody informed him that, just by the way, when you will be passing, there lives a great sage, and he is just the contrary of you. You are going to make a world empire, and he has even thrown his ball, because he says, even without it, he is happy. So why carry this burden? And you say, unless the whole world becomes your empire, you cannot be happy. So he is just the opposite pole. It will be good if you meet him. Alexander was fascinated. It happens. The opposite always fascinates. The opposite always fascinates. It has a deep sexual attraction. Just as a man is attracted to woman, or woman is attracted to man. The same attraction with the opposite. Alexander couldn't bypass. It was not good for him to go to Diogenes. And it was impossible that Diogenes should come to him. There was no need. Diogenes was informed. Many, many messengers came to inform him that the great Alexander is passing from this way. It would be good if you meet him. He said, great Alexander, who has said this to you? I think he himself. So tell your great Alexander that he has nothing to give to me. And there's no need. And I'm a very small man. He used to say, really, I'm a dog, not a man at all. Just a dog. So there is no need. It is below his dignity to meet this dog. Then Alexander had to come. Diogenes is reported to have said that, I hear you are going to win the whole world. So I thought, I closed my eyes and I thought, okay, I have won the whole world, then what? So this has been my problem constantly. I have won the whole world, then what? It is reported again that Alexander, hearing this, became very sad. Then what? He said to Diogenes that, don't talk such things, you make me very sad. Diogenes said, but you will become very sad when you won the whole world. What can I do? I'm just imagining, and I have come to conclude that this is useless. So you are after a suicidal effort. You yourself are trying to win the whole world. Then what? If you succeed, then what? Alexander returned from Diogenes and is very disturbed, upset, sad. He said to his companions, this man is very dangerous. He has shattered my dreams. And he could never forget, never forgive Diogenes. The day he died, he remembered him again. And he said, it may be that fellow was right. Then what? So second thing, remember always, whatsoever you are doing, whatsoever you are achieving, remember to ask, if you succeed, then what? Is there any meaning in all this? Or just some artificial meaning given by you? Just a device to create an illusion around, so that you feel you are doing something worthwhile. And all the time wasting life and energy and not doing anything worthwhile. Because then there is only one thing worthwhile, which is, if you can become happy without anything, without any dependence, if you can be blissful alone, totally alone, nothing is needed for your bliss, only then you can be blissful. Otherwise you will be in misery, always in misery. Dependence is a misery. And those who depend on positions, those who depend on accumulated knowledge, those who depend on this or that, they are helping their own miseries to be accumulated more and more. So second point, remember, have you got any meaning? Or are you just floating without any meaning? Just make believe that this is the meaning for my existence. One man used to come to me. He used to say that if his son gets to the college, that's all. He will be very happy. He was a poor man, a very ordinary clerk. And that was the only dream, that his son gets to the college. Then the son got to the college. Now the son has become a forest official. A few months back he was here. And he told me that I am getting only 600 rupees per month. I have got two children. This is my only dream. If they can get a good education. That's all. I'm working hard. If they are well educated. And if I can send one of my children to some foreign country to study. His father is no more, he has died. This was his meaning in life, purpose, to make his boy educated and well placed. Now the boy is well placed. Now the boy has the same purpose, to help his children educated, well placed, and he will die. And those children will go on doing the same nonsense. What is the meaning of all of this all? What are you doing? Just passing time? Just destroying life? Or have you got some authentic meaning which you can say makes you happy, blissful? This is the second point which will turn you inwards. And thirdly, man goes on forgetting. You go on forgetting things. You were angry yesterday. You repented it. Now you have forgotten. And if the same stimulus is given again, you will be angry again. And this has been so for your whole life. You go on repeating the same thing. They say it is very extraordinary to find a man who learns through life. Very rare. Really, no one learns. If you learn, then you cannot commit the same mistake twice. But you go on committing the same thing again and again. Rather, the more you commit, the more you become prone to commit it. You were angry again and again, and again and again you repented. And you have not learned anything. Given the stimulus, you will be angry. And you will do the same madness. And then you will repent again. That is also part of it. And then you will again be ready to be stimulated and to be angry. The third thing, if you want to turn in, learn. Learn whatsoever you are doing, learn through it. Take the essential out of it. Look back. What have you been doing with your life and your energy and your time? Same mistakes, same foolishnesses, stupidities, again and again. So you move in a wheel. And it is not good to say that you move the wheel, rather the wheel moves you. Mechanically you go on and on. That's why in India we have called the world samsara. Samsara means the wheel, which goes on. And you are just clinging to some spoke of it. And you go on moving. Unless you learn something about this wheel, this vicious circle, this samsara, unless you learn something about it, you will not leave the spoke and jump out of it. So three words, key words, death, make it a constant contemplation, meaning go on searching for it in your life and learn. Learn through your life, because there is no other learning. Scriptures won't give you anything. If your own life cannot give you something, nothing can give it to you. Learn through your own life. Conclude what you have been doing with yourself. If you are in a wheel, jump out of it. But to know that you are in a wheel, you will have it to go deep in understanding and learning. These three things will help you to turn in. Now the technique. Fourth, simply by looking into the blue sky beyond clouds, the serenity. That's why I said so many things, because the techniques are very easy and you can do them and nothing will result. Then you will say, what type of techniques are these? We can do it. It is so simple. Simply by looking into the sky, blue sky, beyond the clouds, the serenity. And you will become silent and serene, fulfilled. Look at the blue sky beyond the clouds, and nothing will happen. Then you will say, what type of technique is this? Shiva is talking, not rationally, reasonably. He is saying anything, whatsoever comes to his mind. What type of technique is this? Simply by looking into the blue sky, beyond clouds, this serenity. And you will become serene. But if you remember death, meaning, learning, this technique will help you immediately to turn it. Looking into the blue sky beyond the clouds. Just looking, not thinking. the sky is infinite, hence nowhere. Just look into it. There is no object. That's why sky is chosen. Sky is not an object. Linguistically, it is. Existentially, sky is not an object, because an object begins and ends. You can go around an object. You cannot go around the sky. You are in the sky. You cannot go around it. So you may be the object for the sky, but the sky cannot be your object. You can look into it, but you cannot look at it. And that looking into goes on and on, it never ends. So look into the blue sky and go on looking. The object is infinite. There is no boundary to it. Don't think about it. Don't say it is beautiful. Don't say, how lovely. Don't appreciate the colors. Don't start thinking. Because if you start thinking, you have stopped. Now your eyes are not moving into the blue, infinite blue. Just move. Just look. Don't think. Don't create words. They will become barriers. Not even blue sky should be said. Don't verbalize. Just a pure, innocent look into the blue sky. It never ends. You will go on and on and on and on. And suddenly, because there is no object, just vacuum, suddenly, you will become aware of yourself. Why? Because if there is any vacuum, your senses become useless. Senses are only useful if there is an object. If you are looking at a flower, then you are looking at something. The flower is there. Sky is not there. What do we mean by sky? That which is not there. Sky means the space. All objects are in the sky, but the sky is not an object. It is just the vacuum, the space in which objects can exist. But sky itself is just pure emptiness. Look at this pure emptiness. That's why the sutra says beyond the clouds. Because clouds are not the sky. They are objects floating in the sky. You can look at the clouds, but that will not help. Look in the blue sky. Not at the stars, not at the moon, not at the clouds. Objectlessness, emptiness, look into it. What will happen? In emptiness, there is no object to be grasped by the senses. Because there is no object to be grasped, clinged, senses become futile. And if you are looking in the blue sky without thinking, suddenly you will feel everything has disappeared. There is nothing. In that disappearance, you will become aware of yourself. Looking in this emptiness, you will become empty. Why? Because your eyes like a mirror. Whatsoever is before it is reflected. I see you. You are sad. A sudden sadness enters in me. A sad person enters in your room, you become sad. What has happened? You have looked at sadness. You are like a mirror. The sadness is reflected in you. Someone laughs heartily. Suddenly you feel a laughter coming to you also. It has become infectious. What has happened? You are like a mirror. You are reflecting things. You look at a beautiful object. It is reflected in. You look at an ugly object. It is reflected in. Whatsoever you are seeing penetrates deep into you. It becomes part of your consciousness. If you are looking in the emptiness, there is nothing to be reflected. Or only the blue infinity sky. If it is reflected, the blue infinite sky within, you will become serene. Serenity. Because that is there. And if really you can conceive emptiness, where sky, blue, everything disappears, just emptiness, inside also emptiness will be reflected. And in emptiness, how can you be worried? How can you be tense? In emptiness, how the mind can function? It stops, disappears. In the disappearance of the mind, tense, worried, filled with thoughts, relevant, irrelevant. In the disappearance of the mind, the serenity. One thing more. Emptiness, if reflected in, becomes desirelessness. Desire is tension. You desire and you have become worried. You look a beautiful woman, a sudden desire arises. You look a beautiful house, you want to purchase it. You look a beautiful car, just flashed by your sight, you want to be in it. You want to drive it. A desire has come in. And with the desire, mind becomes worried. How to get it? What to do it? Are frustrated. Are hopeless. Are hopeful. Dreaming. Many things can happen. When the desire is there, you are disturbed. The mind is shattered into fragments. And many plans, dreams, projections start. You become mad. Desire is the seed of madness. But emptiness is not an object. It is just empty. So when you look at emptiness, no desire arises. Cannot arise. You don't want to possess emptiness. You don't want to love emptiness. You don't want to make a house of it, out of it. Emptiness, you cannot do anything with it. All movement of the mind stops. No desire arises. With non-arising of desire, the serenity, you become silent, serene. A sudden peace explodes in you. You have become like the sky. Thirdly, whatsoever you contemplate, you become like it. You become that. Because mind can take infinite forms. whatsoever you desire, your mind takes its form. You become it. That's why a person who is just after riches, gold, after money, his mind becomes just a treasure, nothing else. Seek him and you will feel rupees inside, the sound of rupees, nothing else. Whatsoever you desire, you become that. So be conscious what you are desiring, because you are becoming that. If you look at emptiness, and the sky is the most empty thing, just near you, and cast nothing, and you are not to go somewhere, to the Himalayas or to Tibet, to find out the sky. They have destroyed everything. Technology had destroyed everything, but the sky is still there. You can use it. Use it before they destroy it. Any day, they will destroy it. Look, penetrate into it. And the look must be non-thinking. Remember this. Then you will feel the same sky within, the same dimension within, the same space and blueness and emptiness. That's why Shiva says, simply by looking into the blue sky beyond clouds, the serenity. Fifth, listen while the ultimate mystery